So this is the third hour of the lecture, number four. We just completed a teaching learning activity where you have to reflect as an individual, as a group. Make sure this is working here. On the IT security expert group here at HIG, where should it be placed? And I've written some words on the board here. I'm all tangled up. Information Security Expert Group. This is HIG. You have something in called FA, Fagadministration. The IT. I'm just inventing that we have a legal department. We have CCIS. We have NISLAB. Would you like to come down and explain to me where you think it should be placed, and write it, and why? Okay, you have to come down. Sorry. Now, the reason I'm doing this is the type of question you will get on the exam too, but it's also, go ahead. Okay, good. The leadership of HIG. You can write that. He's saying the leadership of HIG. Sorry. And why? Well, write it down if you can in a couple words. Just the points right now. Just one. Thank you. Good, thank you, I understand. So the relation was that if you have people in leadership, they lead, and there's a need for leadership and information security at HIG now. Right? Do you agree on that? That would give you a D or an E on the exam. If you use a social technical perspective, do a social technical analysis of the problem. What is the problem at HIG today? Is it that we don't have good technology or we don't have good policies? It seemed to me that you were indicating that we don't have good policies. Is that correct? And if you said it that way, you would get a C, a B. Because here you're using the social technical model to analyze the problem and say, I would do this because X and Y. So when you're doing a social technical analysis, you're saying, I'm looking at the organization, in this case is HIG. HIG needs a social and technical control system. And in my expert opinion, we do not have enough policies in place. There's a weakness. There's not enough social countermeasures, right, to deal with this. So I would suggest the expert group sit there. That doesn't have to always sit there, but given that situation. If we had enough policies in place. You say we need someone to drive the technology. Then you might say it's better to put it in the IT department. Right? If it's a problem of not so much policies, we have it that the Norwegian, okay, we have NSM now. Most of the cyber attacks that are done against Norway are using university resources to attack. Why? Because we don't have the right policies, we don't have the technology. Now, the way you could answer that question was using the other social technical model. Culture. In this case. Now, when we're doing a social technical analysis, we always say look at the system in focus, look at the system above and the system below. So the system in focus right now is Hague. What is the system below? If you want, you can say students or teachers or whatever, researchers. You can have those levels. What is the system above? Government. NOKUT. Department of Knowledge, right? So you have Hague, NOKUT, students. Now, the other thing you always have to look at when you're modeling a system, put these over here now. I guess I put it around my neck. Is who are the threat agents? Okay, so you have to model the threat agents. What is one of the reasons why do you think people attack and use universities? We have a certain culture here, we have a certain structure, and we have certain machines. And we don't have all the methods in place in order to get that secure enough. Because it's very difficult to say to students, all right, every time you log in, you have to use this password. Imagine if you had the same type of access control systems you have getting into a bank. Everybody has to code, et cetera, et cetera. We don't do that here, right? We don't have that same access control. Why is that? Because we don't have the same culture, we don't have the same structure. We have, in many cases, the same machines, but we don't have that. So that's at the Hague and the student level. So that's another way you could say is that, okay, since in order to get security, this unit can help change the culture, can help change the structure, has the power and the authority to implement the methods. So that's a way of answering the question, using the theory that I've given you in the course. So you look at first, using the stack model, the SBC, what sort of social controls are there, what sort of technical, that's way of arguing. Or you use the dynamic model that talks about the culture, structure, and method machines of that layer. And what is the reason why we have a certain culture and structure? Because we have students as clients. A totally different relationship you have with your bank as you have with as a student. Not totally different, it's different. And that's when you have to do this social technical modeling and say, okay, students are not the same. So imagine here if I had this relationship and I wanted to model how I'm going to improve the security. The next question, where should the security expert group be placed in a bank? Again, who are the attackers? What's the problem? So here, should it be the IT department because it's a technical issue? Should it be the legal department because it's a compliance issue? But going back to this model, you have a bank. Above the bank, you have the regulatory authorities that decide on how much security should have in the bank, right? So you have the bank inspection. And this layer, you have the clients. Okay, so that's a way of thinking abstractly and then taking these abstract models and applying to a problem. Okay, and that's what the course is about. I want to see how you can take an abstract theory and apply it to a practical problem. What's the practical problem? Where should we put the security management group at Hague? It's not a theoretical problem. It's just a and then can you use any of your theory to justify your decision? And you can read in the chapter how they talk about this. I've seen one organization. It's a rather international organization. It's called Sandvik. They're a large international multinational company that has security steel around the world. They've decided to put the information security department in HR, human resources, because they're saying that the security problem is a personnel issue. As a scientist now, how should we deal with that using a sophistication falsification approach? The hypothesis is that the the organization whose social technical control structure matches best the social technical problem will have less incidents reported. That's a hypothesis. 5 years from now, we can figure out whether Sandvik actually does have that. And unfortunately, as a scientist, we can't say which is better. And that's because we can't really model the security problem. We don't know how well is the security problem. What are the risks? So that's what I'm saying. At a master's level, I want you to think both practically and theoretically. So I always have an issue when I'm reading these types of books, and I want you to read it, you should get through this exercise, is they're going to be keep listing the same things up and down again and adding more. So checklists are good. You should know them. And what I'm going to be testing you on again is how you can see the relationships. Say, for example, in Chapter 7, they talk about access control permission 14. As opposed to configuration management rules 7 and 8. Now, I won't ask you to remember those, but I would give you this, and I would say, can you explain how access control 14 requires, and I'll list it from this book, I will take it from the book, is related to configuration management rule 8. Okay, that's an example of the way you should think. The next chapter has to do with the concept of accreditation. So what we're doing is we're moving up the problem if you read chapters 9, 10, 11 in the first compendium. Yes. Okay, good. Thank you. I apologize to those offline, online. I will show you the slides we use. We started off with, we were discussing this slide here. This was a teaching learning activity, and it had to do with the question discussed in Chapter 6, where should you put the Information Security Management Group? Then I went on to slide number 7, and I discussed a bit on Chapter 7, and I discussed a bit how these checklists should be read and studied. The idea is I'm trying to see how you would relate controls to each other, both technically and socially. How is Access Control 14 related to Configuration Management Rule 17 technically? And I will list them on the exam. So it's not a question of you memorizing what AC7 is. How is AC7 CM8 listed? Right, now I'm in discussing Chapter 13. And Magnus, thank you very much for pointing out. See, I have to have someone to match the variety. You're matching my... Okay. Accreditation and certification. These are two words. And they're used different in different communities, so it's not that important to understand the difference. But from a system perspective, what I want you to see is that we're looking at organizations and national level. So we're looking at the problem from a national level and an organizational level. So the United States has been very influential in trying to figure out how to set certain standards, so has the British government and a lot of different organizations. And you'll be reading about these standards in Chapter 13. So you have a standard called ISO 27001. It's being transformed now. It's called the Information Security Management System. And basically what it does, it has list 133 controls, and then when you do an audit on an organization, the organization first has to be able to have a document called the Statement of Applicability. So, I don't know if you can read this offline, but what happens, this is the national level, this is the organizational level, and this is the international level. So ISO stands for International Standards Organization, and it's an international standard to look at security management systems. They have decided and they've ratified and agreed on 133 controls that are important to consider in a security management system. And then as information security auditor, I go into an organization and I would say, okay, these are your risk. Which controls do you think are applicable? And they would have a list of statement of applicability of controls. And then I look at their assets and see if that actually makes sense. And if that was okay, then as an auditor, I'd be able to submit that they can get certified. Again, certified. I'm accredited as an ISO 27001 auditor to certify an organization. The next slide shows the type of structure that's going on in the 2701. You have requirements, you have code of practices, you have risk management, you have measurements. And then different sectors have different types of standards. So you have sector-specific standards. 2701 is supposed to be for the telecom sector, and they have one specifically for the healthcare sector. Again, we're looking at the problem from a national supranational to national to an organizational level. This is a diagram that I used to use and explains how you actually do an audit of an information security management system. I won't actually repeat it, just you can look at it in your own time. These are the steps you have to follow. As you see here, the thing to understand is that the important one is in the middle here, is it talks about inventory. So you in the statement of applicability, you should have what is called an asset list. In a sense, if you were doing an audit, say, of Quest Gym or AKA, you would ask them, what are your assets? They would have to have that. They have some sort of list of that. And then you say, how are you protecting these assets? Do you know the risk? And if the management there says, yeah, we know the risk, then reality, if it's not too vagrant, that is an information security management system. As long as they know and they've documented what they know. My job is not to judge whether the risk appetite is good or bad, but whether they documented their risk appetite. Chapter 14 in the book talks about the privacy laws around the world and the different regulations that are known in information security. One of the interests you should read about is called the Safe Harbor. It's how the United States, this is an American book, unfortunately, so there's a lot of these principles. And it describes what has to be in place to have a safe harbor. This type of regulations was designed so that Google could store information about you in San Diego. This is being revamped, so the textbook is out of date in a sense, but it's good to understand the principles. Again, what is interesting here, and what you should know for the exam and the course, etc., is not necessarily the law itself, it's not a legal course, is how you can match these legal principles, and then how it relates to this model. As you see here, what we have, and if you read the IEEE paper, we discuss how when you have two connecting systems, what you have to look at is how the ethical system of the United States, the legal system, the administration, the operating system, etc., can be related to those systems in safe harbors. So here, they talk about principles that must be provided. Notice, choice. Now, going back to making you guys lawyers, one of the huge differences between the United States and Europe is this line here. To opt in, opt out of the collection and forward of transformation. If you're by default, you're in, should be automatically put into a when you go onto a site, it says, do you not want information to be collected about you? Or do you have a site saying that information, do you want information to be collected about you? Right? So that's going back to this model here. So you have the law, and then you have the procedure. How do you inform the individual that they can opt in or opt out? And these are legally different. In the United States, I think it's automatic. In Europe, you have to opt in. So how do you get these two systems to be compliant? You can see right now, if I did a social technical analysis, I'm saying at this layer, the administration, the legal layer, going down to the application, this application is not valid in this system because of the laws saying that in privacy laws you have to automatically be you have to opt in. You can't choose to be opted out. Social technical modeling, how would you implement a social technical control for this? Use the, okay, good, yeah, but what you could do, yeah. Good, good thinking. I'm just thinking here now. Let's say I'm trying to get a bunch of technicians to think like lawyers, but could I have it at the operating system ISO stack level that if the IP address is an American address, the application has to say this. If the IP address is a European address, it has to say that. That's an example of a social technical solution. Right? That's what I wanted to train you guys in, because what usually happens, a lawyer says this, but it's okay, well, we can solve that by having the IP address. Next issue, is that good enough? Why? He said no, so I'm just saying. Okay, to give an example of a social technical analysis and solution of that. You open up a toy that you buy for your niece or nephew or your son or daughter. What does it say on the plastic bag that the toy is wrapped in? This is disclaimer. What would happen is that when you enter the VPN solution, you say a disclaimer. Would that solve the problem? We don't know, but that's an example of how you deal with a social technical solution. In some jurisdictions, yes. The same way the fact is says, you know, that if the kid puts his, someone puts his, use the plastic bag to do whatever, the company that sold it are not liable. Just by putting that little label that this is not a toy. That's a social countermeasure to deal with the technical thing that people suffocate inside plastic bags. That's an example to understand the abstract, concrete, social technical way of thinking, social technical security. So that's why I always want you to think, when you ever have a problem when it comes to IT security, think in terms of control stacks. Now, unfortunately, as you see, this is a very, very complicated control stack, but this is the way it works. And it's up to us to figure out how many resources we're going to put in. So, if we have this diagram again with risk and security controls, and then I can have, you know, micro controls up to ethical controls, right? And, you know, the in order to get the risk down to zero, I have to have this situation that every bit in my control system is connected to some ethical, legal policy issue. Then I have no risk. But is that possible? No. So we have to decide, okay, we're going to be here. And then, that should give us lower risk, I hope. Be like that. That should give us lower risk if we have some controls. Okay, so that's that chapter on privacy. That was chapter 14. And in chapter 16, I want you to relate to the, I have a chapter 7 in the compendium that talks about this. I implemented a system like this way back in 1992. And you can read about it, how that's related. Chapter 19. I don't know how many people here read Chinese. They talk about recruiting, hiring, and firing. Right? So, as I say, these are practitioners. I draw this diagram again. Practical. Theory. They use the term hiring, that means recruiting people, firing, educating. So as I say, in the course we gave you the system holistic model, and the way you can model hiring, educating, and firing of security issues is IPO. Right? You have a system, it's a personnel system. How do we deal with the input? How do we process? How do we get the output? Again, the idea behind the model is to help you simplify the problem. You have practical words here. We have theoretical models that help us deal with that. Now, in terms of the processing and managing, you have different concepts. Least privilege. Does anybody ever heard the term least privilege? So you have both social least privilege and you have technical least privilege. You have two-man controls, you have separation of duties. On the right here, is from Huawei. This is from one of their personnel posters, saying that Huawei people should have the courage to self-discipline, the readiness to be promoted and demoted. So they have hiring, educational, etc. So you see how different policies can be implemented in terms of hiring and firing. Now, what's interesting in terms of policies, one thing I saw working in a Chinese company, I've never seen it anyplace else, but should you have a policy? Okay, we have a policy to, if people do not classify information correctly, they actually had a policy that if you overclassify a document, you can be punished. So if a document that is public and I've made it top secret without giving a good reason, you can be punished for overclassifying. What theory helps us deal, justify that? It's a simple theory, requisite variety. Right? The control system says that we can punish you for underclassifying a document. That can only deal with a certain variety of behavior in the control system. Can individuals overclassify documents? Yes. Do we have a policy to deal with that? I've only seen one company that does. Okay, just to sum up a bit. The exam is going to be 2 hours. You're going to have short answer questions and 60% long to medium answer questions. As I say, I'm hoping that some of you can contribute with an example of a newspaper article or some information of a public incident now that you believe should deserve a social technical analysis. One happened 2 weeks ago in Sweden with Telia Sonera. It's interesting because it's an old problem that I've seen before working at Telia Sonera. Should you allow people to transfer password files using FTP? The answer is no, of course. Do you have a policy in place forbidding that? So that's an example of an issue, right? I mean, if I'm using if I have my passwords going over insecure protocols, what's the good of having the passwords? And that was an incident coming up, and you see different ones. So what I'm looking for is incidents where you both, it's either a social policy and a technical policy together that didn't work. Maybe we understand social policies forbid people from overclassifying documents. Technically, how do we deal with that? And if an incident occurs 9 times out of 10, it's because there's a gap between the social control system and the technical control system. Not that we don't know technically how to control it, not that we don't know how to make policies, but we don't know how to write policies and use technology so those things are coordinated. And it's interesting, last year we did the heart bleed vulnerability. I don't know if those are familiar with Heartbleed. It had to do with open source community and how they do testing. So basically the right answer to that question, that unfortunately, I guess it's my own fault, but not many students got, was the fact that the open source community does not have a good method for testing software. Because the person who wrote the code tested the code. And in the operations, the people who do the testing of the code are not the security testing are not the people who developed it. In this case, that's what happened with the Heartbleed, the SSL. He actually tested himself, and he did it. I think he had about, and he released it at 23:59, whatever, just before it's done. So you can imagine the stress that he was under, etc. So that's another thing that could have given you indications. Anything. In the car industry, we talk about Monday. Do you have that in Norwegian too? You have a Monday issue car? So if the factory workers in Volvo produce a car on Monday, don't buy it. There's a better chance that there's mistakes done on a Monday than on a Friday, believe it or not. But in this case, it was the code coming out on Friday that can be the case. So how would the grading be done? So as I say, this is a course looking at your ability to reflect and think about social technical problems. So if you can just sort of list out the different points, or say in a social technical model we have social controls and technical controls, and some of the social controls are X, fine, and some of the technical controls are Y. Interesting. But what I want to see is that you can reflect on how these controls are related. I gave you some examples during this lecture today. Examples, some short answer questions. What is requisite variety? Handcuffs are examples of variety, amplifiers are absorbers. How do you define the boundaries of a social technical system? I gave you the answer today. How many people remember that? It was 2 hours ago. How do you formally define the boundaries in a social technical system? And it was a diagram. I will jump to the answer. I hope the other ones are doing this. I'm on slide, an open system. So how do you define the boundaries? When you have a node, and it's the amount of control you have over that node. So in this case, this diagram is showing that you have this much, I say four-fifths control of labor and one-fifth not control. So you can say that's the boundary. It's when you do not have control that's in any environment. So in this case, we talked about the law of requisite variety. If this individual can produce 5 states, and we have control over 4 of them, those 4 things are part of the system. The other boundary is the environment. And remember, security and risk is about the ratio between the known and unknown control possibility states of the resources over the amount of attacks. But that's an example of how you can the question. I'm jumping all the way now to other slides. And that's an example. What is the thing? Security certification. That's from chapter 13 in the book. And these are short answer questions. Basically, the notion behind short answer questions is to inspire you to read. An example of a long answer question. Remember, when you're looking at the long answer questions, look at the system in focus, describe the system above, the system below, and the system in focus. So, for example, this ATM issue, the article, the system above was the regulatory system, the system below was the customer, and the system in focus was the banker. The different ways of attacking in the article were spyware and digital hostages. So these are things that you can see from the attack articles and the way of describing it, right? So you should know what spyware is and how that is. And if you go back to the SPC model, where is spyware? It has to do with the application, the operating system. And what are the policies to deal with spyware? Name a policy. This formulate a policy that could deal with spyware. Before, when you log into a system, the device has to check with known spyware fingerprints before it can be given access to the system. Right? That's an example. It's hard to have someone to deal with unknown spyware fingerprints. All right. Now, make sure, remember, the reminder is that on the 11th, on Monday, I will open up a fronter page. You can put in the task. It's from groups. I will say what you have to have on that. You would have to have your name, obviously, your numbers as students, and what you communicated to the innovators. Because remember, the exercise is to, and if you, it'd be good if you can include a log. If, for example, I have one student that came in and said, we sent some information to the innovators, but we got no answer. That's all I want to know. And if you sent it once, that's one thing. If you sent it twice, it's another thing. You have to learn how it is to communicate with. Maybe you could have a Skype session. Maybe you could, as I say, the reason I'm giving you this exercise, and a lot has to do with my experience in the field, is that security specialist, you were selling parachutes to the Wright brothers. And to some extent, the reason we have the security posture we have today in most systems, that no one really knows how to do that correctly. And for good reasons, there are different reasons for that. But I'm hoping that once you've, the individuals that take this course will understand the problem, and hopefully you will come up with solutions how to convince people that security is important and make sure it's put in from the beginning, not at the end. Okay, thank you. Remember, there's Skype sessions on Sunday mornings. So if you have any questions about the lecture or what's going on, you can always book a Skype session. If there's too many, of course, I'd have to send out an email about that, but as it is now, I'm not getting overrun by requests for Sunday morning meetings. I will be in Canada next week, but that's okay. I mean, we have internet in Canada too. And usually what happens when you travel like I'm doing, you're sitting in a hotel room at 4 o'clock, there's nothing going on TV, so you do work anyways. You never get used to the sleep cycle, so you end up working most of the time. So, okay. Stop. Stop already. Everybody knows how to get access to more or less.
So what happens is my recording didn't work well. It's kind of hard to know the three things. I don't have the requisite variety in my brain. Why was this on pause? I don't know. That at West Point.